Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon. The Soul of Business with Clarissa Montero on Money FM 89.3.
Good afternoon and welcome to Money FM 89.3. This is the Soul of Business on the workday afternoon. I'm Clarissa Montero, joined on the phone today by Andy Rees, Managing Partner of Odgers Berntsen Southeast Asia. Andy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Clarissa. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back. Now, the last time we spoke, we talked about CEO or for a Day program. Today, slightly different topic, the future of work post-COVID-19. Not that we're post-COVID-19 yet, of course. But it has presented some very unique challenges to the workforce. Working from home has raised questions about the mental well-being of staff, particularly in light of the fact that working from home has meant huge blurred lines for a lot of us. When is it work hours? When is it family time? Are we going to see more jobs where this is the new normal and a more permanent reality for us?
You know, how times have changed since I was last on your show, Clarissa, right? And I don't think any of us saw this disruptive force that the pandemic has brought to the workplace, to the home, to everything that we know. And I think, you know, just sort of framing the discussion, the question that you asked me, as I've talked to HR directors, board members, regional leaders, the underlying fact here, and this has impacted us all, is that this pandemic has led to a series of losses for everybody, right? From our sense of safety, both personal and family, to our social connections, to our financial security. So if you think within that premise, and then the impact that working from home, how our jobs have changed, how the measurement of success has changed, the impact and the stresses that that puts on people and mental well-being is clearly going to be very different to what it was 6, 7, 8 months ago. In terms of the workplace staying this way, I do believe personally that this working from home, this remote working is here to stay. You know, it's going to be very hard for organizations that have continued to be relatively productive in the pandemic to enforce that everybody has to be back to the office, right? But I think employers need to think long and hard about how do I restructure my expectations on the workforce? How do I measure? What's KPIs? What does success look like for? You know, if you're in sales, delivering a number is one thing. But if you're in other parts of the organization, what does success look like? It isn't just about being in the office anymore. So I think employers have a lot of thinking through in terms of how do we reset expectations on our employees so that they're not glued to the computers 12 hours a day worrying for their jobs.
You know, you have to also admit that the employers are probably right now thinking, how can we downsize our offices and save some money?
Well, do you know, there's an interesting spectrum there on the calls that we do, these forums that we run. There is still, from a leadership perspective, there is clearly a cost implication, right? And right now there's a lot of real estate that's left empty because people are working from home. Mm-hmm. But then there's an alternative view for many leaders that says, you know, I really want to get the team back together. We're missing the cultural piece. We're missing the energy that we have when we're together. So there is certainly a bit of a dichotomy out there, I think, that says, well, how do we manage this remote working? How do we keep the culture alive? But equally, how do we potentially save some money? Because one has to question, right, is all of this real estate and dedicated desks or spaces dedicated to hot desking, is that really necessary in the future?
The other thing that I'm starting to realize is before COVID-19, I had spoken to a few, not many, but a few regional HR heads of large corporations who were starting to implement mental wellness programs and mental health supports for the employees. Now with working from home and the additional stresses of that, trying to juggle everything and all the expectations and working more independently of direct supervision, you know, when your boss is within sight of you, you work a different way. Let's be honest, you do. Do you think more companies, more bosses now are going to have to rethink mental wellness support for their staff as well?
Absolutely, without question. And, you know, it was only recently I was on a call with a client and his leadership team, and they'd been personally impacted in one of their team members that had left their organization not so long back had committed suicide, and somebody within their organization, a younger member on their team, his roommate had committed suicide, right? So this was very much a direct result of the environment that people are finding themselves in. So there absolutely has to be a focus on that well-being and that empathy, that outreach, that how do I make sure these people that are not in the office every day, that they are okay, that they are in control of the situation around them as much as they can be. And I think a lot of leaders have to change their style, right? You know, you would have seen this over the years, Clarissa. There's a lot of leadership out there that is the command and the control, right? The, you know, sort of fixed bayonet, over the top kind of mentality. That doesn't work in this remote from home, working from home, remote distributed workforce. You know, you have to be humble, you have to have a sense of humility, you have to be able to outreach at an empathetic level with your employees, and you have to, you know, encourage this self-assessment, looking after each other, mental awareness in that remote workforce. And it is a different and challenging environment for sure, but a critical thing for all leaders today, without a doubt.
So you put that alongside the fact that this working from home thing, at least for some of the organization, is here to stay. It's an interesting thing because there are the cost factors. This is going to cost money for companies to implement, but you save some money on the real estate. You spend some money on the mental well-being of your staff. It all comes back to the same cost, wouldn't it?
You know, that's an interesting question. I wish I had the financial nous to be able to answer that one, Clarissa. I'm not sure I do. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you've got that remote workforce, it does put a different dynamic and a different onus on the leadership team, right? You know,
maybe you need different leaders.
And do you know what? That's a very fair statement. You know, in some of the work that we've done recently in conjunction with the Harvard Business Review around Leadership Confidence Index, right? There was about a 15%, there's only 15% of companies that had faith in their leadership, that they had the right attributes in the face of disruption. And that was primarily digital disruption, then not the catastrophic disruption that we're currently going through. And there was a mindset change that people were looking for in their leaders. And they were saying, you know, it's no longer that hero leader, that command and control. We're looking for people that are resilient. We're looking for people, but that they're motivating, they're emotionally intelligent. They understand how to, you know, sort of manage all stakeholders within an organization. They're entrepreneurial, they're risk takers, they're inclusive problem solvers. So there was definitely, I think, a momentum within the workforce at large that leadership style needs to change. And I think even more so now, as we gradually come out of this pandemic, come through the forthcoming recession, that change in mindset, that agility of leadership, that adaptability is going to be paramount. And that needs to filter down to the well-being of the staff that are no longer perhaps resident in, you know, offices around the region.
Right. We're speaking with Andy Rees, managing partner of Odgers Berntsen Southeast Asia. Now, some people are really enjoying working from home. They're performing up to expectation, perhaps even exceeding those expectations. Some, on the other hand, are really, really struggling. I see it within my own team of colleagues. Some are loving it. I love it, by the way, because I am an introvert. Stay at home and work. I can do this. But some others need that human interaction on a regular basis. What do you think are the biggest advantages with this whole work from home situation?
I think there's a few things around that, Clarissa. I think one of the key things is that mutual understanding from both employer and employee that I can't be glued to my computer 12 hours a day, right? There has to be some allowances for a bit of flex time, right? You know, whether that's family coming in and out or whatever. But there has to be that trust that I will get my job done. I think one of the key things, a benefit that's happened, you know, in the last 3, 4, 5, 6 months, it seems like an age now, is that the leaders and the team and everybody in between have got to know each other at a different level, right? You get on these big Zoom calls and you've got people with their kids coming in, they've got their dogs on their lap, you're seeing them at home. So that kind of leadership overcoat has gone away. That hierarchy, right, has been diminished a little bit. So I think that ability to see people for who they are is a real benefit to many people. When I look at people that might be struggling in this environment, you know, many people say to me, you know, it's probably the older generation who are struggling with the technology and, you know, they've spent much of their career face-to-face and this is hard for them. On the opposite end of the spectrum, though, Clarissa, some of the youngsters are struggling, right? Because they're missing the social interaction. They're missing the cultural migration or grabbing the culture of a company that they've joined. They're missing that, you know, water cooler mentoring sessions with somebody senior in the organization. They're missing all of those pieces, right? So I think it's affected everybody in different ways, but, you know, there is a positive side to it as well, in the sense that people are able to have perhaps a bit more of a work-life balance if they're able to understand that their job's not at threat by the fact they're not logged on for 12 hours a day, right? So,
yeah, that's interesting, and you touched on it, so I'm going to ask you, let's take a closer look at it. What are the trends? Are you seeing a trend yet? Who is having the most difficulty working from home? Does it break down by industry or age group or seniority levels within an organization?
I don't think it's possible to bucket it, really. As I said, I think it's right across the whole demographic spectrum. Some people are perfectly fine with it. Others struggle with it. Much of it comes down to your own character, right? I mean, I look at myself personally. I'm not a youngster anymore, but I'm of the realization now that my wife has always been right, and I really am a grumpy, antisocial, reclusive misfit, right? So I'm perfectly suited to working from home and not engaging in a social environment. I do jest a little bit, but you get where I'm coming from, Clarissa. It's the personal characteristics of each person that determine how comfortable you are and what do you need. What do you need, right, in order to feel worthy of your job, in order to feel secure in what you do, in order to feel valued, right, that you're contributing, that you're learning, all of those things. Some people can do that remotely, others can't. And I think it's beholden upon the leadership and the employers to be looking diligently across the spectrum of their workforce and the people that work for them to see who's doing well, who's struggling, what am I seeing? Am I seeing mood swings in some people? Am I seeing different behaviors? And it's beholden upon the leadership, in my opinion, to really be monitoring that and doing what they can to make sure that people are okay as best as possible in this current situation.
And it comes back to mental wellness support for staff that perhaps a year ago not many companies were looking at.
Absolutely.
All right. Now, one of the unfortunate outcomes of this pandemic is, well, you know, first and foremost, mid-career professionals, which I am, we're always kind of in danger. We always have been. You know, it's our age. It's maybe it's how much money we earn, what have you. But with this pandemic, mid-career professionals are going to lose their jobs. Do you have advice for them?
That is a real sad part of this whole thing, isn't it? And we've seen it before in other economic cycles, right? There's always that sort of mid to late career professional that does seem to get hit worst. You know, I've always been of the ilk that one has to have an adaptable mindset. You have to try not appear to be set in your ways, right? I mean, in the new world that we're going to be going into, people are going to be looking for people to come on that have an ability to think outside of the box, right? Now, this is very challenging for a lot of mid-career professionals because they've been doing, in many situations, doing the same thing the same way for many years. So what I would suggest to people like that is push your personal envelope now. Take the opportunity. I mean, we're very fortunate here in Singapore. The government does a phenomenal job of offering, you know, skills-based training or so many things that you can do to push your personal envelope and learn new things, right? And I would encourage people to say, okay, what do I have an interest? Could be artificial intelligence, right? Could be whatever. Something that you're interested, you're keen about, and go and learn about that. Show to the employers that you have an ability to take on different tasks and an adaptive mindset and an aptitude to do different things. On the flip side of that, though, Clarissa, is I really would be looking to the employers now to also be saying, look, you've got to change your mindset to an
and
attitude
so do
for
they.
All the workers. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. The employers absolutely have to be changing their mindset and saying, you know, there's value in those people. Let's drop the blinkers, take the blinkers off, stop categorizing that tranche of the workforce, and we have to be more receptive to them. And I really will, you know, I'm a firm believer that the employers have to take ownership for that as well. The employees have to do their bit, but equally the employers have to open their thinking a little bit, be more receptive, and give those people a chance. Don't just look at a CV and go, oh, you know what, that guy's done 20 years at PSA or 20 years at the Postal Service or whatever, wherever the, you know, look at them as a person, give them an opportunity to display what it is they could do for you as an organization. It's a two-way street. That's how I look at it.
Which goes back to my statement earlier that maybe we need different leaders as well.
Yes, as I said to you, now, I mean, I can point you to the Leadership Confidence Index that we recently did with Harvard Business Review, and it speaks volumes around that.
I'm sure it does. Because, you know, the thing is, having spoken to a lot of individuals like yourselves, and that is advice that is actually very practical, reskill, upskill, change your mindset, be more open to change, etc., etc. But at the end of the day, you may not even have an opportunity to explore those options because an employer is going to go, exactly as you said, 20 years in PSA, he's probably not going to be thinking along these lines. He's not wanting to try to do something different. We'll give it to the 30-year-old who's just finished their master's, you know. So you don't even get the opportunity to say, yes, hey, I am thinking out of the box. I have reskilled. I want to do something different. You don't even get that chance to say that.
That is very often the case. And that's why I think it is beholden upon the employees, the employers, the organizations to think differently, right? If somebody has proven that they're willing to commit to do and learn different things, in very simple terms, you know, you can look at that person, they've committed to that. You give them an opportunity to come and do something different in an organization. How committed is that person going to be? How passionate are they going to be? For me, the return that you would get on giving an employee of that, within that generation, giving them that opportunity, you are going to get huge returns on that, right? And I think employers need to be more open-minded to the kind of individuals that may have had a long tenure somewhere but have gone and done something. They push their personal envelopes. They deserve an opportunity to have their voices heard and to be listened to as potential employees in organizations, without a doubt.
Okay, we're just about out of time, but before I let you go, I'd like to circle back to where we started from. Singaporeans have had a real problem talking about stress-related mental well-being challenges. Let's face it, the truth is we fear that it will be viewed as a weakness. We are concerned that if we raise it at work, that it may cause us to be passed over for a promotion or worse. It may derail our careers, particularly now in this very, very scary, uncertain time. Is there any truth to that? Do employers really look at that or don't they?
I want to answer that in two ways, Clarissa. Firstly, I wouldn't say that it's only Singapore, or Singaporeans that has this inability or unwillingness to talk about stress-related mental well-being and other mental issues like depression. I mean, it happens all around the world, particularly in communities where a person may need to maintain a front because he or she's the breadwinner, the head of the family, and society places expectations on them and demands that they maintain a certain image, right? I mean, I come from a very working-class, tough environment in Wales. My very own brother suffered with depression for 30 years, and none of us knew. We always thought he was just an angry man and you know, was just that way. And it wasn't until his wife forced the issue that he learned, and we learned, that he did have a mental issue that needed to be dealt with. Now, coming back to the question around, does it hold people back? We as a firm are against any form of prejudice,
sure.
Right? Without a doubt, right? Whether that's whatever form that may take, we're absolutely against any form of prejudice. I cannot, in my entire career doing this executive search work, that I have ever seen anybody on a CV openly put that they have had a mental health issue, right? Now, if they did, I would hope that anybody in my organization would be completely unbiased and would put that person through a due process. I do believe, though, and this is another unfortunate thing, that there is perhaps some unconscious bias out in the world that we live in today, that if people do talk about it, they may well be categorized as, you know, perhaps not suitable for a certain job or a promotion. And that's the stigma that we all need to overcome, right? I mean, mental health is a challenge, the same that we have in the same as any other medical condition, right? And we all have to learn to live with people that have that. We have to help them through, and we have to give them chances in life. There possibly is a bit of a stigma in certain organizations, but we need to overcome that in the way that we have other prejudices, or we're trying to overcome other prejudices.
All right, we're out of time. We've been speaking with Andy Rees, managing partner of Odgers Berntsen Southeast Asia, on Soul of Business. Andy, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for the opportunity, Clarissa. Great to talk again.
I'm Clarissa Montero from the Workday Afternoon News and Finance Updates to come on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.